tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday and Sunday right here on KTEP. And joining us today on Perspectives is Sue Monk Kidd. Sue is the author of the best-selling novel, The Invention of Wings, also The Secret Life of Bees and The Mermaid Chair. And we want to welcome Sue Monk Kidd to our show. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today, Sue.
Well, thank you for having me.
Is it okay if I call you Sue?
Of course.
Okay. Well, I mentioned The Secret Life of Bees, and that involved also a little girl, like your new book does, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. But it's very similar, and I don't want to say it's the same, but it's similar in the fact that in this book, I'm talking about The Secret Life of Bees, the little girl's family has black servants, and they're fleeing abuse in the civil rights, South Carolina civil rights era. And this one, of course, is pre-Civil War. And it's interesting because for an 11-year-old, well, for anybody, but for an 11-year-old particularly, a birthday is a big thing. And then all of a sudden, for your birthday, you're given a slave. And that's pretty much where your book starts, sort of. So I'll let you carry on from there.
Well, it's true. There are parallels between the two novels. Actually, in The Secret Life of Bees, my main character, Lily, runs away from home and ends up in the home of three African-American sisters who keep bees.
That is correct.
And learns lessons of life. And in this novel, we again have two young girls around the same age who are going to grow up and confront issues of race and gender. So that seems to be a motif that I have going in my work. But yes, The Invention of Wings starts with a very infamous birthday party in which Sarah Grimke, my main character, one of my main characters, is presented a slave, an enslaved girl about 10 years old, as a human present. And this was actually one of the more disturbing things I uncovered in my research, is that this kind of thing went on at the time.
Now, take us back to you growing up, because in one of the interviews I heard before, you mentioned about growing up in the South and the fact that you were exposed to the white culture and also some of the black culture. But at the same time, you realized that some of these atrocities were still going on.
Well, I did grow up in pre-civil rights South. I was a child in the 50s in Georgia, in a small town, and came of age in the 60s, a real turbulent time when civil rights issues were, of course, erupting. And so this made a great impression upon me because, as a child, I witnessed huge racial divides and injustices and really cruelties and separate water fountains and marches going on near my hometown with a lot of backlash. So this was really the stuff of my childhood and my history. And I don't suppose it's that surprising then that, you know, I would want to write about these matters, these issues, when I got older. I think it's something that is still in me, still with me.
Tell me a little bit about the little girl. So first of all, we want to let our listeners know that one of your protagonists in the story, The Invention of Wings, Sarah Grimke, is based on a true life character.
Yes, she is. I stumbled upon her while I was in New York at the Brooklyn Museum, and I was incredibly impressed and moved, really, by her life and what she accomplished. She is a historical figure who is little known, really. I had not heard of her either, and she was one of the first female abolition agents in America, along with her sister. They were the first two. And not only that, they were pioneers for women's rights. And they have kind of fallen through a crack in American history. And so I knew right away, as I read about their lives and what they actually accomplished, that I wanted to tell their story. But at the same time, I knew that I didn't want to just tell the story of a white woman at that particular time in history, which is early 19th century Charleston, South Carolina, but also the story of an enslaved woman, and twine their their stories and their lives together.
It's interesting what you do in the book, and other authors have done it as well. I know Jodi Picoult does it, where you switch back and forth between characters. And in this case, of course, you're going back between Sarah and Hetty, the slave, who is also called Handful. Tell us about that style of writing.
Well, it's the first time I have attempted it. Usually I have one main narrator who's telling the story in their own first-person words. But this time, I really wanted to show both worlds. The world of Sarah, which her family was a wealthy, slave-owning, aristocratic family in Charleston. And then one of the enslaved girls in their household. And so I wanted that world represented. So I had to figure out how to develop two very distinct voices and synchronize their stories, because, frankly, these two young girls who will grow up in this novel, I mean, it spans 35 years, they will shape each other's lives dramatically and change one another and have a kind of uneasy relationship for the rest of their lives.
It's interesting because, as you mentioned at the beginning of the interview, the fact that Sarah is presented with not a toy, not a book, but a slave girl. And, of course, she's appalled, and she doesn't want to. She doesn't want Hetty. However, the family insists, and in fact, if I remember correctly, she gets punished sometimes because she befriends the little girl and teaches her how to write, how to read. But there's also some indication in the novel that they like each other, but it seems like it's Sarah does it out of guilt, and then Hetty, sadly enough, because she knows that she's household property. She's not just another girl.
It's not an equal relationship, unfortunately, obviously. And that's true. I knew that I would have to find a way to portray a very complex relationship here. You can't exactly call this an ideal friendship. Not under the circumstances. And I wanted to get that right. I really wanted to show what I felt like could be an authentic rendering of how they might have related. Yes, Sarah was guilt-ridden, and a lot of her relating to Handful was motivated by that. And there was defiance on Handful's part. There was a lot of estrangement and conflict between them. But I have to say, at the same time, there was genuine caring in there. I mean, they did like each other. They wanted to have a friendship, but it was just marred by, you know, so many things. So I guess in the end, I would say that it was complicated, and it was that there was genuine, maybe even we could call it uneasy love between them. And I think that kind of won over in the end.
Tell us a little bit about Handful. How did she get that nickname? Is it because of the obvious?
No, it isn't actually. Handful is what is called a basket name. And this was a practice that I uncovered in my research in Charleston. Enslaved mothers would sometimes give their children basket names. And it was usually based on things like what day of the week it was, or what the weather was like, or how the child looked, or something like that. And the reason they did this was because the master, the so-called owner, would have the right to name their children. And they really wanted to confer identity on the child themselves. And so they were kind of secret basket names. But Handful comes from the fact that she was born very sort of premature and was very tiny. And her mother looked at her and thought, she's just a handful. And that became her name.
You mentioned her mother, and her mother's name is Charlotte. And Charlotte tells the story by making a quilt.
She does. An important aspect of the story is the fact that her mother is a seamstress, and she passes down this really refined gift to her daughter. And they're both very accomplished. And her mother wants to preserve her story on that quilt. So she creates a story quilt, and she represents the real truth of her life, the painful parts, as well as others. And so it's It's an act in a way of subversion, a way of declaring her life and how it has been stolen from her and what she has experienced. And it becomes a very precious item in the story. But I really felt that I wanted to say something about the importance of illiterate women who were forbidden to read and write, how they could tell their stories with cloth. And this is a real art to combine quilt making and storytelling.
And this is something that has been going on, well, in history for a while, because there have been books out about different quilts and pictures, museums of some of these quilts that tell stories.
That's right. That's what inspired me, actually, is that I came across a slave quilt that was created by Harriet Powers, who was an actual enslaved woman in Georgia. And her quilts are true masterpieces of art and narration, and they have been archived in the Smithsonian and the Boston Museum of Fine Arts. And when I saw them, I knew I wanted one in this novel.
And you mentioned the sad part of the story, and one of those sad parts is when Charlotte tells Handful about the bondage and what her grandma or granny mama went through.
Well, that's part of her story, and we all need, I think, to be able to know our story as best we can and be able to tell that story and find meaning in that story. And for Handful, it's really an act of healing to know her story, even though it has some very, very painful aspects to it. I mean, her grandmother captured into slavery in Africa and brought to this country, and so her mother is trying to show her her roots.
But she at the same time gives her daughter hope, because she tells her, and this is from your book, before in Africa that people could fly, and quote, she then pats the child's shoulder blades, assuring her, this is all what's left of your wings.
But you're going to get them back. And that was the message that she gave her daughter. And it was a gift. And her daughter, Handful, who narrates her story, is never going to forget that. And it seemed very important to portray the aspect of hope in these stories. I wanted Handful's life, and Sarah's too, really, to be inspiring and to leave the reader uplifted with all kinds of possibilities, because in a way, this book really is about the way we humans, all of us, invent our wings and overcome and transcend. And this was part of Handful's story, and she will most definitely find a way to invent her wings.
And while Charlotte's mother is giving her daughter hope, on the other side of the coin, Sarah's mom and dad are crushing her hopes, because when she reveals her ambition to her father, who is a judge, he is angry and tells her that she's speaking nonsense. And then her mother tells her, and I'm paraphrasing here, that every girl must have an ambition knocked out of her for her own good, and that she needs to go husband hunting.
Isn't that shocking? Yes. And this is not far off the mark at all. In fact, when I was reading about the lives of women, even very privileged women in the 19th century in the South, I was overwhelmed by how limited their lives were and how they were expected to live out their whole lives in the domestic sphere. And Sarah, of course, wanted to be the first female lawyer in America. And everywhere she turned, she was met with complete resistance to that by her family, because this was unheard of. She was trying to break barriers, and that's always hard. And eventually she's going to do this. She's going to break huge barriers for American women.
And as you mentioned, the story spans a 33-year era there. And so she does, her and her sister, Angelina, I believe is her name?
Yes.
Okay, her and her sister go out, and her sister gets married. But then her and her sister write a book, or is it just Sarah who writes American Slavery as It Is?
They both write this book together, along with Angelina's husband. And it was a very influential paper booklet that they created, which influenced Harriet Beecher Stowe when she was writing Uncle Tom's Cabin. And it was a record, a testimony of slavery in the United States in the South. And not only did they do that, but they did writings of their own. They were such feminists before their time, and they wrote papers, one of the first feminist documents in America. They crusaded for abolition. They were not just against slavery. They were for equality between all races. And this was radical for the time.
And as you mentioned, not just race, but also talking about gender, because the talk of women's suffrage was not yet coming along until the days of the Old West after the Civil War.
I like to think that Sarah and Angelina were among the first, if not the first, to light a spark in this country. They were the ones who linked abolition and women's rights for the first time. And, you know, it's interesting that it's through fighting for the rights of others in this country that women discovered their own oppression. And so they began something with this realization, and they were out there just fighting for a woman's right to speak in the public sphere and meeting such backlash for it. So, you know, I think it's good to remember where we came from and that history and the great strides we've made, but also it makes us aware of how far we have yet to go.
And there are a lot of things that still need to be fixed, as you mentioned. And, of course, we've had now books like 12 Years as a Slave and The Butler and some of these other books focusing on African Americans and just how they're treated. And we're in 2014. It was 50 years ago. People are talking about the Beatles. But this was the year also of civil rights, Vietnam, and people were realizing that African Americans were treated the way they were treated. They weren't, some of them were saying, well, they're different from us, but at the same time, they didn't realize how badly these people were being treated.
Exactly. And this is one of the ways that I think reading historical fiction, a novel like The Invention of Wings, which is, you know, set in the early 1800s, can be relevant to us today because it shows us how invisible these things can be to us. I mean, there were so-called upstanding people who owned slaves and who could see nothing wrong with that. It was strangely invisible to them. And we look at that from our perspective today and wonder, how in the world is that possible? How could they not see? And yet they didn't somehow, or they completely denied it because, you know, it affected and made their way of life possible. But the question becomes, how are we doing that today? What is invisible to us? What don't we see? And I think it sort of begins to percolate in our own thoughts, these kinds of questions you're raising about how we're treating people and that capacity in the human heart for cruelty.
Tell us a little bit about historical fiction, because as you mentioned, it's fiction, but at the same time, you're writing about history. There's a fine line there as far as what kind of artistic license you can take, and how accurate are you going to be on your facts, even though it's fiction?
Well, it is a challenge to write from that place where imagination and history will intersect, and I wanted very much to portray Sarah Grimke's life with as much accuracy as possible. That was important because she's, you know, I guess I revered her history. I wanted people to come away from this book really knowing who she was, what she did, and the turning points in her life. And I think they will if they read the book. But having said that, I also have to serve that story as a novelist. I'm a storyteller. And so I'm always going to try to serve that story the best I can. I'm not a biographer and I'm not a historian. And so I also had to graft on a lot of imagination, imagined scenes, particularly between Sarah and Handful. That's where it really comes in.
Was this difficult for your editors as far as saying, well, that's not the way it really happened, or I don't think that a white girl and a black girl could be friends, but, you know, children, they don't see this. We're the ones who teach them.
Yes, my editors were very supportive of me. Of course, they wanted it to be not just historically accurate, but also a really wonderful read. That's what we all wanted. And to do that, I think sometimes we have to go to our imagination. I mean, Handful is an imaginative character, really. And Sarah, while she's historical, she has a very dramatic story. And I tried to imagine things, but I kept it within the context of my research, which was fairly extensive, and tried to be true to the time.
How long did it take you to do this, Sue?
It was about, well, it's hard to say, because I researched almost full-time for about 6 months, and then I began writing the book, which took me about 4 years. And one reason it probably took that long is because I had to stop and research as I went. You know, things came up that I wanted to explore. So it was kind of back and forth.
Now tell us about the cover. The cover is beautiful. Very
colorful. I'm glad you like that. Yes, I loved the vivid colors of it, and I loved the hint of blackbirds on the cover as well, with that water scene and the sky. Because, you know, these are important parts of the novel. The blackbird is a great symbol in the story of wings, and it represents, it's on the quilts that Handful and her mother make. And it represents this idea of flight and freedom, because they're questing for freedom here. And the blackbird comes to symbolize that. So I love that it ended up on the cover.
You know, you mentioned blackbird, and we talked a little while ago about 64 and 50 years ago, the Beatles came to America. One of Paul McCartney's, well, the Beatles, Paul McCartney wrote the song Blackbird, was a very big hit. And that was about the African Americans and their struggle.
Yes, I have forgotten that. I was a teenager back then, and I do remember that. You've jogged that back to my mind, indeed.
And it says also, when are you going to spread your wings and learn to fly?
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of like what you said in your book about Charlotte talking to her daughter.
Yes. We need someone to inspire us to find our wings and to have the daring to put them out in the world.
I'm going to take you back a little bit, Sue, and kind of get off the subject here. We're still talking about books, but I mentioned that you are the author of The Secret Life of Bees. But the book that's in between there, The Mermaid Chair, it's very different. Tell us about that.
It is different. After I finished The Secret Life of Bees, I wanted to do something different, because The Secret Life of Bees had been very popular, had so many readers unexpectedly, and they all wanted a sequel, it seemed like to me. You know, so many people wanted to continue that story. But I knew that I needed to go in a different direction and do something very different. And so this story is about a woman at midlife, in the middle of her marriage, who falls in love with a Benedictine monk. And so it creates a big crisis in her life, of course. And it really is, though, a story about midlife marriage. It's about her struggle to belong to herself, to find herself again, and she's kind of becomes lost and adrift. So it's that kind of story, and in a way, there were some parallels with The Secret Life of Bees in a sort of very different way. They both have a community of women in them. I really believe in the power of female communities to help change us and support us. So they both had that. And they both books, the central theme is about looking for our belonging, whether it's to ourself again or to find home.
In the book, The Invention of Wings, as you mentioned earlier, Charlotte inspires her daughter and wants to help her, support her. And that's usually what mothers are stereotyped as. And, of course, there are some fathers who, of course, do that as well. And I'm a father, so I know I'm very supportive of my girls and my son. But you also took on a project with your daughter.
I did. And that was one of the most rewarding things I think I've done as a writer. My daughter and I did some traveling together when she graduated from college. And when I turned 50, and we decided later we would write about that. We didn't set out thinking we would do that. It was the last thing in our minds. But later, after we came home, there was such a story to tell about the transitions in our lives So we sat down and collaborated on a book called Traveling with Pomegranates, which is a mother-daughter story, but also about women's lives and how we change and grow.
So is this a book that's written as a narrative?
Yes, it's written in a it's written as a memoir. It's written in narrative form, and it alternates between my daughter's story and my story. So again, it's similar to The Invention of Wings in that, except it's nonfiction. We're going back and forth telling our stories and weaving them together.
Now, The Invention of Wings is obviously available in hardback. Is this also available on ebook, Kindle Fire?
Yes, it is. It should be readily available as an ebook as well as print.
Oh, and audio, I'm sure, too, as well.
Oh, yes, in audio as well. And I have to say, I recently heard the two readers who read the stories of Handful and Sarah, and I was really struck by them. I thought they were remarkable.
So you don't get to choose your own readers?
Well, they let me hear their voices. The woman who read the role of Sarah also narrated The Secret Life of Bees, and she was phenomenal in it. So I was very happy that she returned to do this role. And the woman who narrated Handful's role, she was in the 12 Years a Slave, the movie, and she is incredibly good as this narrator in the book.
That's awesome. I'm a big fan of audiobooks, and I did hear The Secret Life of Bees. I've read this book, but I'm going to have to download the audiobook and listen to that as well. Sue, thank you very much for being with us here today. We know you're very busy. You have a hectic book schedule, but we want to thank you for taking the time to be with us here today.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
We've been visiting with Sue Monk Kidd. Sue is the best-selling author of The Secret Life of Bees, and her most recent novel is The Invention of Wings. And of course, you can find it at any bookstore, and you can go online. She also does have a website. It's SueMonkKidd.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
SueMonkKidd.com. Sue, once again, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This show, along with past episodes of Perspectives, are available on our website, ktep.org, and may be downloaded as a podcast only for personal use. Any rebroadcasts of Perspectives or portions thereof are not allowed by law, except with the express written consent of the producers and host of Perspectives. All rights reserved by KTEP, the University of Texas at El Paso, and the UT Board of Regents.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. We had help this afternoon from Joshua Alexander and Luis Hernandez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.